morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 Fan. Justin and Ailish feel a little bit extra energized this morning because I went to bed halfway through that college football game.
Halfway? Was it halfway?
That was a snooze fest.
That was bad. Bad, bad, bad. We can't. We got to remind ourselves. Next year when everyone's like, wow, look at TCU's portfolio. Look at the resume of the Big 12 champion. No, they didn't even win the Big 12. We can't do this.
The last text,
two SEC teams minimum.
Yep.
One Big 10 and just figure out the rest. We can't do it again. We wasted a whole year waiting for that. It's awful.
It's quite sad, actually. Georgia, my Bulldogs, 65-7 victory over TCU. The last text message I sent was, TCU stands for, this crap's unwatchable. Logged off.
Admittedly pretty good. Just straight to bed. Just drop the mic.
Do not disturb mode. Set my alarm.
This crap's unwatchable. And it was. Did you stay up long enough to see the
curtain?
I'm
just kidding
calls?
When I said I went to bed because I ended up watching 98% of that game.
Okay.
It was more dramatic to say that, but unfortunately, I did. Yeah.
I mean, you didn't have to pull back the curtain.
I know.
It's fine.
You're speaking about curtain calls.
So you did see the curtain calls.
Yes.
Then. I kind of didn't like the curtain calls. You won
what
last
about
year.
It?
We have to do this. We have to have.
This is the highlight of many of their lives again.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, they get to do it twice. I was talking about how long it takes, and I was shocked that it started at 7:45 because mm-hmm. it felt like last year I was up past midnight watching this thing because it lasts forever. And Kirby Smart's doing double curtain calls, one for the quarterback, another one for the seniors. Like, let's get to the celebration.
I don't know. I kind of see it because this is, well, that's whatever Bennett buddy who's everyone's jokes.
Stetson.
Everyone's jokes is that he's 28 years old.
He's, yeah.
But that's it. Your final college football appearance.
You know a thing or two about college
eligibility.
He's got a good
story, you know, whatever. If it's the national championship, I think you have the right to do your little curtain calls and pageantry. And that,
all right.
I don't see it the same way as you. It adds to the length of that game, which needed to be wrapped up real quick because it was over within the first quarter. I thought, wow, TCU plus 13.5. We can just
Burn that up.
Throw that in the trash can. That's the last time I listened to the stats nerds when I'm looking for bets, though. I got really sucked into that being a close game.
I don't know how we can be fooled. Like, it's a different league. Every single time you have a heavy hitter from the SEC versus someone that looks outstanding against its pool of competition, and we tell ourselves it'll be different this time, and it's never different. I don't know why we do it. We're dumb.
Most points ever scored in a national championship game. The over looked real great after that first quarter. That's about as exciting as it could be for a Georgia Bulldogs fan, maybe.
It didn't have to get to the over either, but Georgia kept.
They didn't let up. They kept going. We're
going
to break all the records tonight. So my friend that went to Georgia, Brittany, I texted her at one point saying, are you enjoying this? And she said, she's very, very sweet. She goes, well, I'm not too confident. I don't want to be too confident, but I'm pretty happy so far. And I said, this is amateur hour. She goes, I feel pretty great now. I think they'll cover the spread. I'm like, yeah, you think? It's like a 40-point smashing success right now for Georgia. Anyway, I'm obviously happy in the end. I guess the biggest question that comes out of this is Georgia on their way to be the next football dynasty? Back-to-back, first time since Alabama went 2011, 2012.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I think good old Stetson Bennett's going to have to ride off on his horse, though. Like, he's done, right?
Stetson's, yeah, I think he can't play any more college football.
The time is finally run or expired for Stetson Bennett. I'm sure they'll have the next best. Maybe we saw
it. Well, buddy that got in at the end of the game was their projected number one next year.
So, yeah, I'm sure they'll be good. They'll be back. SEC will be back.
Alabama and Nick Saban, 6 national titles in 16 seasons, sorry. So,
yeah, you're not holding Alabama down for long. However, they are losing Bryce Young, so they're losing their quarterback as well. But
it is something maybe to chew on. You just consider.
We'll revisit next year.
365 days from now.
It's time to park college football for at least the next 6 months.
Well, it's too bad because I was really looking forward to that being a bit more tightly battled, mm-hmm. and it nonetheless was not allowed for a little bit of a lighter viewing experience because we had breaking news last night. Tighten your belts. Brandon Belt, a member of the Toronto Blue Jays, a 1-year, $9.3 million deal.
Reported, right?
Yeah.
Nothing official yet.
Okay. Reportedly.
It's going to be a Carlos Correa situation.
Oh, I really hope not.
Hope not either.
If you don't remember Brandon Belt, or you do remember Brandon Belt, he spent 12 years with the Giants. He's turning 35 this year. He was an All-Star in 2016 and is a two-time World Series champion in 2012, 2014.
Yeah, like a good decade removed from like him being in the public consciousness. Mm-hmm. Like he's been in San Francisco for a long, long time. That there's still remnants from their World Series teams in the early 2010s is pretty remarkable. But he's stuck around there for a little while, stuck around through injuries last year. But he's coming off some impressive numbers from the post-COVID seasons. Mm-hmm. Stuff that you could really, really talk yourself into if you're a Blue Jays fan, I think. The first name that came to my head when I saw this was like, okay, this is kind of like the Cody Bellinger conversation.
That's
where
right.
It's like, okay, you're putting all your eggs potentially in one basket in a reclamation project in Cody Bellinger. Instead, I think the Blue Jays, we were off the path for sure, because they go the opposite direction, get the antithesis. Not the antithesis, because Cody Bellinger plays a really, really solid defensive outfield. But Kiermaier is the different player in that you kind of accept that he's not going to be as productive as a plate, but you know what you're getting in the outfield, and I guess you can bank on some health. But Bellinger was this high risk. I guess it turned out being high risk because he was paid a decent amount of money, but high risk, high reward, where, yeah, if he turns things around, you could have something really, really special here coming off a couple years only removed from an MVP season. Mm-hmm. So Brandon Belt's kind of that mold where his numbers last year were brutal. He was highly limited because of injury. But if you can look past the injury, if you believe that he can overcome what ailed him last year, you're only a couple seasons removed from some real, real mm-hmm. production at the plate. And he comes in as a backup, someone who's going to be platooning, not in the traditional sense like every other, but filling in behind Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in both a designated hitter and first base role. He's that left-handed hitter. I mean, he's kind of exactly the sort of player that they need, and because they get him at the price they got him, because he's a bit of a reclamation project in that he had injury concerns last year and has to prove that he can do it again. So I feel like it's hard to quibble with this one. It's mm-hmm. a good, good depth move, something that could really pay off if he can find his form from a couple years ago. And again, he's not very far removed from being a really, really good and productive hitter.
Okay, so the numbers, he played 78 games last year due to this knee injury. He's had 3 knee operations, but he's passed the physical already to join the Toronto Blue Jays, so no Carlos Correa situation there. Mm. He should be fine. He seems healthy. But as you mentioned, his 2020-2021 season, he had some really, really great numbers moving forward from the start of the COVID season onwards. He had the injuries, which restricted him from playing last year. But he's another left-handed bat, and the Blue Jays have added now 3, Kevin Kiermaier, Dalton Varsho, and him. And we talked about what are on your wish list for Blue Jays, left-handed bats. This is taking a flyer on someone. I see it as a low risk, high reward. Mm-hmm. Because if it's a 1-year situation where he's not able to contribute, you can move on. And it's not the end of the world. You didn't blow a lot of money. You didn't expect too much from this guy.
You're not squeezing him into your starting lineup every
exactly.
single night. Like if there's a safety net here.
He has a different approach. He's really got a good on-base approach, which is different for the Jays. He was ranked in the 97th and 90th percentiles in walk percentage. So some really good numbers in terms of a little bit of a different look offensively, more contact, less swing and miss. So that's something that they have obviously shifted in terms of their approach. As you mentioned, I think they've had a little bit of a tidier offseason than we had.
Yeah.
Maybe giving them credit for. I think maybe the direction we had hoped for was a big name signing, go out, get something massive. But they've done these little acquisitions that maybe are less glamorous if you're a Jays fan, but they're really putting together some pieces that are bolstering their roster in smaller steps. But mm-hmm. in the end, you're getting a lot of value for not a lot of money at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were serious questions. I mean, they tore apart the middle of their batting order
yep.
and their two-thirds of their outfield to create you know, a lot of speculation over what it's going to look like in the end. But I think they are a lot closer to optimization now, I think, from a lineup perspective than they were. And I guess the big picture thing, the thing that's a little frustrating is like, how did you not realize that there were issues last year? And maybe that's part on us. We were so excited about this team and the odds makers were so excited putting them pretty high up on the board.
Well, I don't think we thought that it's some like, of these, like, think about Jose Barrios and Yusei Kikuchi and Ryu.
I mean, more so with the lineup. It's like that lineup was flawed. It was clearly one note. It was the same thing over and over and over again.
I guess,
again.
Well, like, George Springer having major injury concerns kind of snuck up on you maybe too.
I guess. But what I'm saying is like, okay, you went out and got three lefty bats and two of those lefty bats are high, high, high defensive acumen guys. It's like you were so far in one direction and now you've swung it in the opposite direction. Hey, we need, not only do we need this in abundance. And it's like, okay, how could you not have realized that last year?
Well, I think I completely agree.
But this isn't even a belt conversation. This is more Varsho and Kiermaier. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is it's another lefty bat. It's a guy who takes some of the responsibility away from Alejandro Kirk in terms of DHing because Gabby Moreno is gone. So I just think this one in particular checks off all the boxes. But like I do every time they make an addition to their batting order or someone who's going to fill a depth role, at least from the offensive perspective, I wonder about last season.
For sure. And in retrospect, it's easy to look back and say it was so obvious your glaring errors that you didn't have as a team. And that's on management. And I think we tried to hold them accountable throughout the rest of that season and into the playoffs when those holes became even more evident. You know, watching some of these other teams have incredible seasons, thinking, well, why don't we have anything close to X player, X lineup, X outfield? But you know, you're right. It has been a glaring now issue over the last couple of seasons that you weren't in that upper echelon. Maybe we were a little bit jaded by the fact that they played a season without a real home. And that was an excuse that was easy to make. You had young talent that really hadn't found their footing yet. And Bo and with Vladdy, you didn't really know how much better of a season, you know, Vladdy could have had. So there were a lot of excuses that I think we made, us, you know, media, fans, and a hopefulness because they were so close to clinching the playoffs the year before, came down to that final game. You were left with a taste in your mouth that it could have been. Then you get another season and you're like, I don't think it really could have been. Like, we didn't have anything close to some of these all-star rosters. So it does help to see some of these holes being filled, whether they're the glamorous names or not. There's a step in the right direction. At the same time,
it just makes sense.
At the same time, they're kind of low risk. Like, if this guy doesn't pan out, oh, okay. Like, he was a $9.3 million deal for 1 year. I think maybe you're feeling a little bit less confident, maybe, and that's fine. But if it doesn't play out, we're going to look back at the end of next year and be like, well, maybe you shouldn't have hit for a couple guys that, you know, you didn't really know what you were going to get because it didn't pan out.
That's fair. That's fair. I think if there's any, like, you know, regret, it will be with pitching because I don't think that is a completed puzzle yet.
I think bullpen specifically.
Yeah, bullpen specifically. I think if we're having this discussion again yesterday or again next year and they add some flamethrower on the back end, we're going to be like, hey, why didn't you have it this year? I think that is very convenient and easy, but also true. But, you know, you said there's no risk. I guess the risk is minimal, but the risk is that he's 2 years removed from having, like, a really strong season, and it was a really strong season, coming off injury, turning 35. But you're not asking him to be Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You're asking him to give you some production behind Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and I think that's the key. And I think if he's healthy, there's no reason to believe he's not capable of that.
So we're going to speak with Ben Nicholson-Smith later in the show, get a little bit more of a look into how he thinks this will shift the way that the roster goes. If he thinks it's, you know, just an opportunity to have someone DH once in a while, take that load off Alejandro Kirk.
Some evaluation of the entire offseason, I think, makes sense.
I think that makes sense as well.
Now that it looks more complete. Like that
small moves versus small, big splash. Was that always the plan coming in? Was that the effect of maybe winter meetings not going the way that they wanted, missing some of these big names, thinking, okay, how do we fill these voids now that, you know, we were left kind of as the the bridesmaid or left in the conversation of you were second or third place in some of these big names. Was this always the way that they wanted to go? Were we kind of too excited about landing the big fish?
To use a baseball term for baseball, a bunch of doubles and singles instead of the home run. And that's probably the way they had to go because there were a lot of holes. There were a lot of things that needed fixing. There was a lot of optimization that needed to be strived for. And I just think to expect one or two catch-alls to fill every single need, I mean, I think that's what they were going away from, where Teo was like a massive, massive part of last season. But to take him, to remove him, they were able to add a couple bodies that fill different needs and hopefully give them more balance from both the offensive and defensive standpoints.
And it's going to look like a really great signing if you get this guy for a one-year flyer and he can contribute to maybe even 75% of what he has been. Like, that will look really, really good. And if not, as we said, a little bit more low risk. Okay, so we got a lot to go through here at the top block. Yesterday, or even now, I guess at this point, Leafs are officially at the halfway point of their regular season. About 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, they were at their quarterway mark, and we did our quarterly Leafs report cards and grades.
We did the quarterly about 5 games after the quarter. Okay. Well, that's okay.
So
it's okay. We're still hitting the halfway mark update.
We're doing a mid-season review, report cards and awards for your Toronto Maple Leafs. It's a great time to check in. The Leafs are 25-9-7, second in the Atlantic Division with 57 points, still 11 back of Boston, who they're going to play this weekend. So you talk about litmus tests. We're getting one Saturday
we'll
night.
Throw that term around Friday.
We can't wait to say that. All right. So we have our previous grades as well. So it's good for a bit of a compare and contrast to where they've gone and maybe where they're left wanting. And just to clarify, my grades are looking at the entire 50% package of what the Leafs have completed so far.
Mine too.
Okay, just to make sure it was not like just at this quarter, it's a full picture of how many games are we at? Do the math. Those
41.
Many games. 41 games.
Okay. It's, it functions exactly like a high school grade, I think.
Just to clarify.
You had something, you know, within the first month or so, first test, first couple quizzes. Now where are you at since then?
Okay, so we have grades for the following: forwards, defense, goaltending, coaching, special teams, the core four, and depth contributions. Let's start with forwards. So at the quarter mark, we both gave the forwards a B.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to grade them today?
I have to upgrade. I have to give them an A-. And I think what was holding them back before was, hey, it's just kind of the core four going. They were overcoming that really miserable start. By the time we did this, they were 15-5-5, so they had recovered. It was mostly the conversation around the Maple Leafs was in a positive light, but they didn't have Michael Bunting being Michael Bunting. They hadn't found a home yet for Callie Yarncroke. Kampf was still on the fourth line. He's since stabilized the two main issues, I think, at that point, which was Pierre Engvall and Alexander Kerfoot. And then Pontus Holmberg, he was playing at that point, but now he's like a proven entity that's doing it night after night after night. So I think we talked about optimization with the Toronto Blue Jays. The optimized state for the Maple Leafs has been achieved with the forward group. Like, I don't know how you improve what they are right now by just moving the pieces around. Yeah, you can add a big splashy addition and make things a little bit better, and I'm thinking they will. But right now, with what they have, they've really found a home for everyone, and everyone's functioning at a really high level or a reasonably high level.
I'm also upgrading my B to an A-.
Okay.
All the same reasons that you mentioned, but I think one that maybe you didn't mention is that the lines have identities now. The first quarter of the season, we didn't know what the fourth and third line, the bottom six, were really contributing. There's a lot of, you know, flexibility between who was playing where. They have established roles. The bottom six is much improved. You mentioned Holmberg, Callie Yarncroke. Engvall isn't a black hole anymore where we can't stand to watch his performance on the ice. He's been actually really improved over the last 5 to 6 games.
Yep.
Kerfoot fits much better in the bottom six.
Say it. Give David Kampf.
Kampf, your guy, has
give him some credit.
Really been a consistent, happy
guy on this roster.
And he makes you happy.
Smile.
And the biggest thing that I worried about during the first quarter of this year was what Michael Bunting were getting was last year a blip. This year, we've now seen him start to come into his own. That's a big reason why I've gone from a B to an A minus.
Okay. I think that's all fair.
Okay. So the defense, my quarterly grade was a B and yours was a C, hard grader. Mm-hmm. Where are you going with this one?
I have to give him an upgrade as well to a B plus. Well, what?
That's the same thing as me.
Well, that's good.
No, it's just
that's
nice.
Good. It's a pretty solid, probably the most considerable upgrade I'm going to give. And it would be an A, I think, if Morgan Riley had returned seamlessly, but it's been a bit of a challenge since he got back into the lineup. I think I didn't even want to give a grade apparently last time because they hadn't even like played together. Everyone was kind of mixing and matching and there was like kind of chaos back there. Mm-hmm. But the Morgan Riley injury changed this team for the better since then. And Brody had an absence as well, but Brody and Mark Giordano have been unbelievable when they've been in the lineup the last few months. Justin Hall, his turnaround has been remarkable. One of the stories of the season, Justin Hall's turnaround. Connor Timmins' addition was undeniably strong, and now they're running 7, 8, dare I say 9 deep. Like, the Maple Leafs don't really have any issues defensively beneath Morgan Riley. And at the point where I'm like, wow, this is their fatal flaw. Morgan Riley, not a number one defense. I'm not there yet because I think he's different than other number one defensemen. And he's just categorized as such because he's paid the most and is the best player that they have on the blue line. I guess arguably you can maybe call TJ Brody that, but 2 through 9, 2 through 8, really, really high level right now. And for that reason, they're upgraded to a B plus. And if Morgan Riley was performing at that level, I'd have to give him an A.
I'm also upgrading my B to a B plus. You mentioned most of it. Sandin and Lundgren have been really much improved from that time where they really had to step into that role. There was a period of time where their backs were up against the wall. The Maple Leafs were dealing with significant injuries to their blue line. They found a way to kind of earn that trust and earn their positions in the lineup. And they have now since been very consistent. As you mentioned, Justin Hall is one of the bright turnarounds of this story. There was a point where we did not want to see Justin Hall on the ice,
mm-hmm.
where he was an absolute liability.
Now we're not talking about
we
him.
We don't
at all.
Talk about him. We don't even mention him.
You don't talk about
TJ
him.
Brody, anytime that somebody needed to play better, they put him with TJ Brody.
The fixer.
He's the guy that is the glue on the back end. And I've really enjoyed Connor Timmins' addition to this lineup. The only thing that maybe keeps me from also an A minus A is I'm a little worried about where Gio's been just in terms of workload.
Mm-hmm.
He's been put in a lot of situations where, you know, a guy of that age, you kind of worry about the big picture. He has performed quite well over the last couple of games. Maybe we've seen a step backwards. And obviously Riley being a reason why I'm not at the A point right now. Still lots of time. We're at the halfway mark, so things can improve, but I'm happy with the little bit of a bump from B to B plus.
In terms of second half priorities, preserving Gio, I think is
He's one of the highest.
Yeah, one of the highest. His underlying numbers are incredible, but you can see times on the ice that aren't in a spreadsheet where he looks old, and you want to prevent that from happening. You want to prevent that from continuing. He needs to be The load needs to be lightened, and you have all the reason in the world and the excuse in the world to do it because you got guys like Connor Timmins, Jordy Benn, et cetera, that can actually play for you. They need to prioritize that.
All right.
You lead here with goaltenders.
Okay. So previously, goaltending, I selected an A minus for their grade, and you gave them an A.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and forth for this one. I think there's a little bit of recency bias over the last couple games, but the sample size from start to finish of this season, I'm comfortable giving them a B.
Okay.
And I really thought between a B and a B plus, and I do think there's a little bit, as I said, of a recency bias. But when I looked at individual grades, last time I gave Matt Murray an A, I gave Ilya Samsonov a B plus and Eric Schallgren a B. Mm-hmm. Right now, Eric Schallgren is not in the picture. He's not involved in this ranking whatsoever. He gets an incomplete. So if I look at Murray and Samsonov, I'm comfortable giving them both a B right now. And that's why my grade is a B. I think they teeter on the edge of having a B-plus performance, but in the end, they've come back down to earth. They're not leading the league in statistics anymore. I think my comfortability level has shifted a bit, and that's why a B is kind of average. I don't feel like they're constantly putting in a performance where they're winning games. I think they're constantly put in a performance situation where they're keeping games close. There's been games over the last 5-6 where they have lost games for the Maple Leafs. So this was maybe the one that was the hardest for me to really nail down.
Last time, what are we? It's 6 weeks or so. Yep. I gave A's to everyone, A's across the board, A overall grade. Not that they were, you know, it was like a projection to the future, but in that moment in time,
yes,
they were all performing. They all had performed very, very well.
They were a reason why the Leafs were actually winning games.
They were definitely one of the reasons, but I've dropped them down to a B minus now. And we're going to have a conversation a little later on at 7 o'clock with Kevin Woodley. And we really break down what we're seeing from Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov.
Nothing from Shalgren.
And he talks about the conditions really dropping. That may be true and is true, but I see play dropping as well. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing cracks, frankly, in both of their abilities and their overall games. I'm seeing two goaltenders with huge questions, more so than anything. Like Samsonov looks like he's kind of falling apart at the seams sometimes. Then he gets it together, and then we see that, yep, that dip again, that regression. And I just don't know if we can trust Matt Murray to always be in the net. Like, I just don't know what it's going to look like yet.
Trust the posts.
I worry. That took over Twitter yesterday. I just worry that he hasn't proved and won't prove by the time April rolls around that he is the type of goaltender who can classify as workhorse. I feel like reliability is the most important thing, and I don't feel like Samsonov or Murray can give you that right now. B minus.
If I told you this season coming in that you would get B average for your Maple Leafs goaltenders, would you have signed up for that?
I think they only need a B, but they need a B every night.
Mm-hmm. It's the roller coaster that we can't have.
Yeah.
The inconsistency. So, okay, a B for me, a B minus for Justin. All right, coaching. So previously we gave both A minuses for this. For me, it's still an A minus. Mm-hmm. I don't think much.
I give him an A.
Okay. I don't think too much has changed in terms of the last stretch. I think things have been pretty positive for the Maple Leafs. The very first part of this season, my storyline coming in, and we both talked about it, was Sheldon Keefe found a way to switch up the top two lines, and mm-hmm, it was sticking. And it was this actual coaching decision that was made that really significantly changed the roster composition. And it was a bit of a bold move at that time. We are just coming off of this West Coast stretch, which, honestly, we were going to burn the team down. We came on the air. Everybody in Leafs Nation was stressed beyond belief. Was Sheldon Keefe going to lose his job? That was the main reason why an A-minus was the grade I gave them last time. There was this honest coaching moment where Sheldon Keefe earned the trust of everyone. In the last sample size, I feel like that's kind of been how I feel about this team anyway. It's been rolling. Things have been good. You just went on this incredible Mitch Marner streak. You know, your core four is continuing to produce. Your bottom six has pushed themselves up. You know, you've tinkered with the power play. Like, that's one of the only things I'm picturing as like a coaching decision that's gone on. And you've been able to shoulder the load of injuries and goaltending mistakes. So I'm consistent with an A minus this time.
So you're right about the first decision in the first quarter, splitting mm-hmm. up the core four, probably the thing that really accelerated this team forward, saved their season perhaps, really got them going. But I did see a coaching change in the last 6 weeks, which was he coached the hell out of this team during the Morgan Riley absence. Like, they were so sound, so reliable, almost perfect defensively that it was kind of scary. And I don't know how you don't put that on coaching. So for that, from that standpoint, he gets upgraded from an A-minus to an A. I just think he's in tune with this team. He is trying new things, which I think the players do appreciate. I just think he's coaching at a really high level.
All right. I went from A-minus to A-minus. Justin went from A-minus to A. Okay, next up, special teams. Quarterly grade for both of us was a B.
I'll give a B+, slight upgrade. I do feel like they're running something right now in the power play that they will abandon come playoff time, so I kind of asked myself, what's the point? But this team sort of runs on success, individual success, maybe core four success. If it's about cookies, which sometimes it is, I think the 5-forward power play will have them feeling pretty good because all their stats will be good. They'll be celebrating point streaks and all those great things. And I think that will in turn, kind of give them something to give them success when it's not that's actually benefiting you, the 5-forward power play, in the end. And the penalty killing is performed at a really high level. So that's more important than I think what's happening on the power play. So I give a B plus and a slight upgrade from a B.
I'm sticking the same with a B. Their power play is eighth in the league and PK is 16th in the league. I just think that the Maple Leafs.
That's surprising because if you do look at the numbers, advanced penalty killing, it's really, really good.
For sure. And it might be better than last year.
I can't believe it was 16th.
But it should still be in the top. If you want to be a team that makes it to the Stanley Cup final,
about results.
It should
it's
be
about
better.
Results. Yeah.
You have the talent that you would want your power play to be contributing at a top, top pace. Eight in the league is fine. It's not good enough. So I'm keeping with a B.
Eight's not good enough for power play?
If you want to win the Stanley Cup, I don't know.
Okay.
I think with the talent on, if you're doing a five-man power play unit.
Five forward power play, yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I think it could be higher than eighth. That's why I'm sticking with the B.
Okay.
Okay, the core four. This one's got some depth to the answers. So quarterly grade, I gave them an A and you gave them a B plus. And I also graded each player individually last time, which I do have again. I don't know if you did that, but
no, I didn't.
Core four from A, I'm going to A minus.
Okay. So it's interesting. You're going down and I'm going up, but we're both going to land on A minus.
Okay. So you went from B plus to A minus. I'm going from A to A minus. So I'm going to grade each player individually and explain why. Mitch Marner went from an A plus to an A. I think he was performing at this incredible level with that point streak, and that was very exciting to watch. But an A plus is really tough to sustain over a halfway mark of this game. I still think he has been in the top one or two of this team. I'm just going from A plus to A. A is still an incredible grade, but A plus is overperforming every night.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. John Tavares has gone from an A to an A minus for me. And that's been one of the reasons that this grade has gone down.
Okay.
And I don't have any level of concern. He's still producing at one of his, maybe his career best at times, but A to A minus. William Nylander, however, has gone from a B plus to an A. He has been one of the bright shining stars of this team, and maybe we didn't see it in the first quarter, which is why he's making the biggest jump here from B plus to A. And then Austin Matthews went from a B minus to a B. And that's still a reason why that this mark is a little lower than it was before.
So I was definitely more critical of them last time out. You gave them an A. I gave them a B plus. I give them a slight upgrade because Nylander and Marner have continued to author career seasons. So they keep the grade or improve the grade just by continuing on with what they've been doing, which is being at their very best, which is, you can't really argue with that. I think Austin Matthews has been a little bit better since November 30th. I think John Tavares has been a little bit worse, but the maintenance from the two guys having career seasons, I'll give them a slight upgrade.
Okay. So we're in the same boat with that one. Okay. Last one for grades, depth contributions. I was tough on this one. I gave him a C plus last time around. You gave him a B plus. I remember this one being a bit of point of contention between
looking
us.
Back at this, I'm like surprised why I'd have to like look back at the rationale why it was. I think it was because of Eric Schallgren, if I'm thinking about it.
Probably.
Okay, so we're thinking about guys you didn't expect to do something. Schallgren stepped up and did a job for them, and I think that's probably why I gave him the B plus. I'm keeping it at B plus because I think the question is like, okay, who hasn't given you something that you like? Who's disappointing you from the depths? Guys like Holmberg, Aston Reese, Timmins, Ben, like everyone's kind of showed you value. Are you considering Pierre Engvall depth, like the depths? He's a pretty big part of this team. He's playing middle 6 minutes. Like it's, I guess it's kind of like how you're classifying what depth means. But in terms of the lowest end of the roster, the margins, I think the margins have been strong. So I'll continue on with the B plus.
Okay. I'm also going from a C plus to a B plus, which is a pretty big jump up. I think the reasoning here is what you touched on, but the depth stepping up huge with those defensive injuries for me, like really, really solidified this jump up. And that had to do with not just the defense tightening it up, but the depth on forward, really locking in their defensive game, really helped this team throughout that stretch where they were bare bones back there. And more point production too. I think that's important. Like it's hard to evaluate sometimes depth, but being on the score sheet more, we went through the rankings last time around of the core four were performing at such a high rate that there was a massive jump off before the next players, and they were basically putting up 2 or 3 points as a whole selection of players. This time around, they've certainly closed that gap. I think that that's important when you're judging your depth. Not everything's about points. It's sometimes intangible stuff, too, and I've seen that as well. So we're both going with a B+?
Yeah, B+ each. I think one of the things that happened or came about from our depth conversation was the idea that they might not have a 20-goal scorer outside the core four. Now it looks like they definitely will. They will be core four adjacent players because I think Michael Bunting will for sure get there, and Cali Yarncroak probably can get there if he sticks with John Tavares and Mitch Marner. I guess the trade deadline might dictate whether or not he stays there. But I guess there's an outside shot now, too, that Pierre Engvall gets there. I think he's up to 8 goals. He'll have to have a really strong second half. But since things have stabilized on that third line, it seems like a possibility. So, yeah, again, we're kind of, what does depth actually mean? Is it the depth scoring? Yeah, they've come on a little bit. Is it the depths of the lineup? Yeah, they've been pretty good throughout the entire season.
Okay, we got to get into the awards, but just updated for in terms of goals. William Nylander leads with 22, Austin with 20, John Tavares with 19, Mitch Marner with 15, Michael Bunting at 13, and Cali Yarncroak at 9. That's your top leaders in terms of just goals.
All of a sudden, it looks pretty good. Doesn't look like a big problem anymore.
It sure does. Okay, so first half awards. Now we have 8 of them. So maybe we don't get through them all. Maybe we do. Okay.
We can do this quick.
MVP. First half MVP. This was one of the toughest grades or awards I had to hand out. You want to go first?
So I've been banging the drum on William Nylander. And I think he should go to the All-Star game. I'm not going to like back away from that. But if you're talking about like wins and losses, tiebreaker goes to Mitch Marner for leading the penalty killing, for being the defensive specialist, the defensive ace. The fact that he is able to provide in that way as well, in addition to what he's done offensively, this has been the season of Mitch Marner. For that reason, he's the MVP.
Well, I would, I guess, agree, but
why are we reluctant to?
Well, I think that William Nylander has just had this underrated quality about him for a while, and maybe that's hard to detract from the first half of the season, but the fact that he's right up there makes me want to hand this award to him. But I think you're right. He's edged out just a little bit by Mitch Marner, but he has a case to be an All-Star, of course. We're trying to get him there with the justice for Willie. He has a lot more primary points than Marner. I think that's kind of an important stat, too. Mm-hmm. He's got more goals. I feel like he scored at some really significant time. He's got 7 times he's brought the Leafs back to even. 4 times he's given them the lead, 2 times he's brought them within 1. Like he's scoring important goals. I feel like he scores in overtime. I feel like he's performs in that moment. It's really close for me. And that's a good problem to have. Maybe we could split the trophy in half.
I'd be okay with that.
Okay. Most improved player, Justin Hall for me.
Okay.
Justin Hall was the reason I stayed up at night. He was a part of Leafs Nation's turmoil for the first quarter of this season. Mm-hmm. He has turned his game around, and maybe it's just because we're not talking about him anymore, but Justin Hall goes out there and I don't even bat an eye. He's not throwing meatballs up the middle of the ice to the opposing team. He's not being a detrimental force on the back end. He has really turned his season around. It's great to see. It's the consistency that I need, but the first half turnaround has been Justin Hall for me.
You said most improved. The turnaround certainly.
Sorry,
Hall.
Most improved.
I'll say most improved, and I think I took this from like last season.
That's what I struggle with too.
Well, it's okay. You can
most
interpret
improved
it whatever
from
you
the
want.
First quarter to the second quarter.
Yeah, but the way that you finished that, kind of like, okay, that's one way of looking at it, and I'll do mine from last year. I guess it's Pontus Holmberg, because you go from a non-factor in the organization to the layman. Like, no one really understood or knew what he does unless you were watching Marley's games and obsessive that way. But now you go from irrelevant to holding down a really important role for this team. If it's improvement from one season to next, I think it belongs to Pontus Holmberg.
Okay. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with the way that he's impacted this lineup. Most underwhelming, Alex Kerfoot.
Okay.
He had so
AKA
many...
AKA the Nick Ritchie Memorial
yes,
Award.
Yes, it's called the Nick Ritchie Memorial Award. This one's tough because I think Kerfoot's now found his spot, his role, but he, underwhelming for me, has been he's had so many opportunities in the second line. I really wanted to go out there and grab it. Mm-hmm. He wasn't producing. He was kind of hanging around. But now he's in a spot that I think benefits him. But underwhelming in the case that, like, I thought that he would take these massive strides and be an impact player in that top six, and he hasn't. So maybe that's why I feel underwhelmed. But in the grand scheme of things, he's still performing. You know, he's got 19 points. So it's hard to say he's underperforming. But the Nick Ritchie Award, it's tough because I actually feel like it's a hard one to hand out this year.
It is, and I'll give it to Kerfoot's line mate, Pierre Engvall. Listen, there's been a little bit of a resurgence
here. That's why I had that one too, but recency bias.
It's just like, okay, you look at both those two, and it's like, okay, who do we expect more from? And you see this big body who could be that guy who could give you what this team is missing, and it just doesn't happen. Well, and I don't know why we keep talking about it, because it's not in his DNA. Hmm. Pierre Engvall's never going to be the person that we think he could be with that frame alone, and that's why it's still underwhelming, but...
But we haven't seen that from him anyway, so how can you be underwhelmed when you've never been whelmed?
That's a good point.
Like, I've been...
The importance of being whelmed.
I have been whelmed by Alex Kerfoot. I've never really been whelmed by...
Okay. That's, yeah, that's... I think it's a good thing. It's like they don't have Kyle Dubas's recognized mistakes, Cut Beta mistakes, mm-hmm. Dennis Malgin being the one this year. It's important that he recognizes when there's an issue and moves on from it. And for that reason... It's hard to underwhelm when you're not around. And Nick Ritchie and Dennis Malgin have been, you know, sort of the faces of this award the last couple of years.
All right. Next award is the unsung hero. Go ahead.
Maybe our last one, and we'll fit the other ones in
sure.
later on. You know who it is. David Camp. He's settled this roster. Upgraded from the fourth line center position to the third line center position. He's fixed what ailed the bottom six. That's it.
I got to get you a Camp jersey one day. I think you're his number one fan. Mine is Giordano. And maybe it was more evident that I think it's in the middle of, if you split this first half into three quarters, it would be more in a third. It would be that middle third that I think he was the best important addition.
So we're going from a half to three quarters now.
Well, like, think about it that way.
I got you.
You know what I'm trying to say.
He was
and is still one of the best value contracts in the league. He came onto this team and took a significant pay cut. He cares about being a Maple Leaf. It means a lot to him. He's been a leader on and off the ice.
Mm-hmm.
He's had to deal with a lot of different defense makeups back there, and he has been steady. He's played an incredible amount of time back there, and he's been maybe... the last couple of games less steady, but he has shouldered a lot and he's been consistent, and that's why he's an unsung hero, because he's not producing. He's just steady. It's like him and TJ Brody have this calming effect on the back end. He had to play with some guys that felt a little bit nervous and shaky out there. Sandin and Liljegren having to like come in and really be impact players on the defensive end. And so Giordano for me is the unsung hero.
Where do you think he'd be on your MVP ballot?
That's a good question.
He's definitely top five, right?
I was just about
like
to
in terms
question
of like,
myself with top five.
If you do like context, relative context,
he's not higher
impact,
than five.
He's not higher than five?
Off the top of my mind.
He really, really was indispensable, as you put it, in that middle third of the first half. Like he might
yeah,
have been
the middle third.
I guess Marner was the MVP of that very specific moment in time, but... Giordano, if he didn't step up in a big way, if he wasn't still capable the way that he is, I'm not really sure what would have happened with Riley's absence.
That's why he was unsung hero.
He was massive.
Unsung hero.
Okay, give him that rather than a, you know, down ballot MVP award.
Okay, we have a couple more awards. We'll tease them. We have best moment of the first half, best roster addition during the first half, the most underrated storyline, and the most overblown storyline or narrative. Wow, we'll circle into those later because we got to take a break, and we have the A-list on the other side of the break. That's next with Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish. By the way, send in your wake and rake picks for tonight. Or you got a couple early birds in the text line fired up to get their wake and rake picks in. God, worst pick of my life was TCU to cover. Whew, that was gone real early. We got the Hornets here against the Raptors at 7:30 p.m. and then full slate of NHL and NBA, of course, to choose from. Send that in at 590-590. All right, couple days away from NFL action returning, but a storyline that I absolutely loved came to light courtesy of Kirk Herbstreit, who was kind enough to shed some personal behind-the-scenes information on Al Michaels. He was on Part of My Take, so this is a snippet from that podcast.
All right.
It's always fun to pull the curtain back and find out more about these legendary broadcasters. Like, always curious how Red Zone works. What are you doing there? How are you making this happen? Well, if you're calling an NFL game, we don't get to see much about what goes on behind the scenes. So a little bit of a insight into the life of Al Michaels.
Two things there. Number one, he will not, if a vegetable gets near him, he'll put a fork through your hand. Like, he doesn't, it's not like cute. Like, he doesn't eat vegetables
yep.
of any kind. That's number one. Number two, I thought that was just something you read about. No, that's 100% true. Number two, I work on a Saturday night show that when halftime comes, they might throw you a bag of Cheez-Its or, you know, like, you know, maybe a sandwich from a local place downstairs. So that's what I'm used to. This dude, we get to halftime. He's, I don't know if, I assume it's him. He's got like steak.
Yes.
Like shrimp. He's got, he doesn't touch the mashed potatoes, but, and they've got like real silverware and they got a plate. And it, you know, you only have 8 minutes at halftime in the NFL. But, you know, as soon as halftime's over, headphones are off, back behind that screen, and they got a table set, and it's like fine dining for 8 minutes.
Man, he's earned that, but mm-hmm. an eight-minute steak, lobster, shrimp, sit down, scarf that down, get back in front of the camera is actually an athletic feat.
Sometimes longevity doesn't make sense, right? Like people that can, like if you're doing that every, if you're hammering, first of all, no vegetables, but hammering just a casual steak, mm-hmm. a halftime steak all the time, that's the routine. He's an older man and he's continuing to do that. Like it's.
And no vegetables doesn't even, like there's like some like important nutrients, digestive
exactly,
factors,
know.
Putting a little green in your body, but he will stab a fork through your hand if you put a vegetable
Violence.
On his
yeah.
plate or approach him.
A what?
Or like approach him with a vegetable.
Oh, approach him.
Like
with
you're
vegetable.
Done.
Yeah.
I know that you have something that you absolutely will not eat.
Oh, there's a few things.
One has to do with ranch dressing or any type of dressing on your salad. It is plain.
No. I can
what
do
you put on it now?
I can do a decent dressing. I don't like doing a mayonnaise-based dressing.
It just revolts you.
It revolts me, yeah.
I don't think there's something like where I won't eat it.
Come on. Name
something.
You have the perfect palate.
But I don't know. I'm not picky like you. I'm not like Al Michaels. I'm going to stab you the fork. I don't know. Like, name something. I'll eat it. Like,
all right.
You can't name anything?
Well, I don't know.
I like Brussels sprouts. I like turnip. Like, I don't know. Like, things that people don't like. Broccoli.
Yeah, you got the perfect palate.
Okay, chill.
You.
I'm just saying that there's nothing. I would probably not eat a meat puck.
I'd eat a meat puck.
I think a meat puck to me is just like a frozen hamburger. Like,
actually,
I'd put that on the barbecue.
Because I hate like gizzard, like that type grizzle.
Okay. I don't
grizzle.
Think I would eat
grizzle.
That.
Grizzle.
You
grizzle,
found
grizzle,
something.
Grizzle,
I don't
grizzle.
Think I would eat like
grizzle is what
like
I would
haggis or like liver. Okay. So I found something that I don't think I'd be interested in eating.
So
but that's
like,
not what
the
they're serving
the
Al Michaels behind the glass.
The meat intended for alligators at the All-Star game is where you draw the line.
Probably.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not like, you know, going to cry if you put turnips on my plate or something. I'll eat it.
I feel like there's more to that. Like, I feel like Kirk couldn't go full out. There's more to the Al Michaels story. He seems
I
like
wish we get
if you're
more.
Having a steak between at halftime every time you do a broadcast, I feel like there are certain, not vices, just luxuries that he's continuing to enjoy. And I think he lives a bit of a different life that way.
Adam just texted in beets. I love beets, Adam. I got the Dwight Schrute gene. I absolutely love a good pickled beet. I make my own kimchi.
I've heard that. Yeah.
I like fermented foods too, sauerkraut, beets,
you
whatever.
Just say it. You got the perfect palate.
Okay,
it's all good.
Then the perfect. Thank you.
You got it.
All right. Al Michaels.
Shout out to Al Michaels.
An absolute legend. By the way, odds makers already put out the national, or college football national title odds for next year. Georgia plus 275. You want to know where TCU is?
100.
Plus 6,000.
Mm-hmm.
This should even be on the board, but that's nice that they threw him a bone.
I'm surprised they weren't throwing at us what they were to start this past season.
Which was off the board, basically, right?
It was probably pretty long. Longer than 60, I'm sure.
So Georgia plus 275, Ohio State plus 800, and then USC and LSU.
Where's Alabama?
Plus 500.
Yeah.
It goes sideways. Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Michigan in the top four.
All right.
Put your futures in, Justin Cuthbert. Futures, Cuthbert. All right, send in your wake and rakes as well. Maybe you've got something you're circling for college football that's 364 days away. We're going to talk to Kevin Woodley on the other side of the break, goaltending expert and contributing editor at Ingoal Magazine. He's also Canucks reporter at NHL.com. We're going to break down the Toronto Maple Leafs goalie tandem, where he came in at the start of the season and where we're at now. Maybe where he would, grade them in a sense, like we just did. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Justin Ailish, Sportsnet, 590 The Fan.